You can shop from anywhere doing pretty much anything. You might shop while working, eating, or even listening to this podcast. And however you shop, we all know and love the thrill of the hunt. But do you also know how to get the thrill of the best deals? Because Rakuten shoppers do. With Rakuten, they get the deals they love with the most savings and cash back. And you can get it too. Start getting cash back at your favorite stores like Sephora, Nike, and even Expedia if you're looking to get some travel in. And getting cash back doesn't mean you have to miss out on sales because those can just be stacked right on top. It's easy to use and based on a simple idea. Stores pay Rakuten for sending them shoppers, and Rakuten shares the money with you as cash back through PayPal or check. Download the free Rakuten app and never miss a deal. Or go to Rakuten.com to start getting the most bang for your buck. That's Rakuten.
Contained herein are the heresies of Radolf Buntwine, erstwhile monk turned traveling medical investigator. Join me as I uncover the blasphemous truth of a plague-ridden world, that ours is not a loving God, and we are not its favored children. The Heresies of Radolf Buntwine, coming January 2nd, wherever podcasts are available.
This podcast is brought to you by Voyage AC.
So I've decided that the only gift I'm giving this summer is that insanely beautiful cement pot citronella candle.
Oh, the one like ours, the big one in the backyard that smells so good and keeps the mosquitoes away?
Yes, that's the one. Mm-hmm. Only they do come in different sizes, large ones like we have, but they also have the votive ones that can sit on your nightstand or your coffee table.
Oh, something for everyone.
Exactly. Voyage AC is your destination for all these amazing candles. You'll want to go online right now and check out their gifts like this beautiful citronella candle, incredible fragrances, and gorgeous face and body products. So, hon, how can our listeners find Voyage AC?
You can find everything on their website at www.voyageac.com. That's VOYAGEETCIE.com.
And as you know, Melanie is willing to give my friends and family discount to all our listeners right now.
What?
That is 10% off everything you buy.
All you need to do is enter the code THEONLYONE at checkout.
That's right. All you have to do is enter THEONLYONE when you make your purchase. Voyage AC is an olfactory journey of candles, perfume, and organic beauty products.
Several times a week, Laura will turn to me after we get into bed and say those six little words I've been waiting to hear all day. Can I read something to you? Once I've said yes, she reaches for an item from her very cluttered nightstand and proceeds to bring that book, blog post, poem, essay, or article to life with her voice. I hope you enjoy listening to her read as much as I do. Here's this week's selection from Laura's nightstand.
Hi, as Scott said, this is On My Nightstand, and I'm Laura Cathcart-Robbins. Today, I think I have something very special to share with you. It's by author Kia Brown, who was a guest on our show in our third season, the 26th episode. So go back and listen to that after you listen to this On My Nightstand. Kia is a journalist, an author, and a screenwriter. She is the creator of the hashtag Disabled and Cute. She has a BA in journalism from the State University of New York at Fredonia. Her work has appeared in Teen Vogue, Elle, Harper's Bazaar, Marie Claire UK, and the New York Times, among other publications, just some small publications there. She also just wrote a story on Selma Blair for Town and Country. That's a beautiful, beautiful essay, if you get a chance to read it. Her debut essay collection, The Pretty One, is out now. And she has a new book coming out called Sam's Super Seats that will be out in fall of 2022 via Cochlea Books, and you can also add it on Goodreads. She loves TV, film, tweets at Kia Maria, and that's Kia _ Maria, about cheesecake and how she should be writing. Another important thing to note here is that Kia is writing, I think, really beautifully about the intersection of disability and race. And so she is talking about Freedom of a Ponytail is about her because she was born with cerebral palsy. She's not able to use her right hand on the right side of her body in the same way that she's able to use her left. And putting her hair in a ponytail is quite difficult. So this is an essay about that. This is Freedom of a Ponytail by Kia Brown. I was 24 years old when I could finally put my hair into a ponytail. This may seem trivial, but it matters, especially when you have spent most of your life keenly aware of all the things you can't do. The knowledge of the things you can't do comes from trial and error, from a society built without your body and mind. My cerebral palsy shapes not only how I view the world, but also how I navigate through it. And because cerebral palsy affects the right side of my body, the most seemingly simple tasks are hard for me. Tasks like clasping pants, opening bottles, zipping jackets, carrying more than one thing at a time, and balancing myself, to name a few. And so putting my shoulder-length hair into a ponytail by myself had always been out of reach until 4 years ago. I didn't feel embarrassed about needing help with my hair until high school. I never saw it as a big deal. My mom helped me, and I went about my way believing that everybody had help from a mom or a parent in some way, that all people were still trying to figure out how to take care of themselves while they figured out who they are or who they want it to be. When the embarrassment came, it did for the standard reasons it often does. With age and puberty come insecurities, and though I developed early and began having my period in middle school, my insecurities only grew when I hit the high school hallways. I'd watch enviously as my classmates put their hair up before gym class. My eyes would follow them as they walked through the halls without limps, ponytails bouncing along happily as their bearers made their way to their boyfriend's lockers, as they navigated the desire of other boys and, again, the world of high school and the certain attractiveness beyond its halls. My identical twin sister Leah was one of those girls. She doesn't have cerebral palsy, and she can put her hair up without even thinking about it. She isn't just good at ponytails, though. If I need a braids or a twist or just a hair look for a night out, I can turn to her to make me extra cute. She is also much more proficient at makeup than I am, and she drives. Back in high school, I wanted to be her. I wanted a body with completely functional hands and feet, a body without a right leg that was shorter than the left. I wanted to wake up glad that I had woken up. I gave validity to every stereotypical idea that I, a disabled woman, hated my body, that I should hate it because there was no other choice. Whenever the idea of disability was brought up in social circles or on TV, it was done in jest or disgust. I was always the exception, and I reveled in it. I didn't want to resent God for giving me crooked lips and fingers and aching knees and hips, but I did. Even though Leah or my mom would help me every morning without complaint, having to wait until they were done getting ready and then ask them to fix my hair really bothered me. At 14, at 16, and 17, and 18, I still had to depend on someone else to do something that everyone around me could do alone. It was an easy disappointment to internalize. I was striving for a kind of independence I knew I might never have. I would go to school and my friends would say, "Oh, you put your hair up. It looks really cute." But I knew that I hadn't done it. My mother or sister had done it for me. A small smile and a nod kept me from telling the truth. In gym class, after I changed my clothes, my hair would fly free from my perfectly coiffed ponytails. I knew that if I took them out, I could not put them back in. So I tried my best to tame them once more with my fingers tucking the stray hairs behind my ears, but they never looked as good as they did before. I blame myself in what I believed to be my incompetence, because it felt like I was the only girl in the world with this problem. The ability to put my hair into a ponytail was just another thing I couldn't do, regardless of how hard I wished for it at night. I resigned myself to being stuck until some outside force changed or bent the odds in my favor. I was Danielle Harris as Haley Wheaton in the TV movie Wish Upon a Star, just wishing for what I believed was better and more popular. At that age, I believed wishes to be cures and allowed myself to be disappointed when they didn't come true, because life was never like the movies, no matter how overused the phrase may be. I imagine boys thinking, "She can't even put her hair up. Why would I go out with her?" Nevertheless, I didn't really work on my ponytail dream in high school. My schedule was already full. I was too busy honing my sarcasm and low self-esteem. Being one of the girls with long swinging hair just seemed out of reach, like a mission destined to fail. And in truth, my defeatist attitude kept me from achieving so much in those years. Leaving high school and entering college introduced a whole new set of challenges. In college, without my mom or my sister to help me, I tried every trick imaginable to put my hair up. For a while, I used a claw. I had a black one and a brown one. But the claw didn't give me a ponytail. It just pulled all my hair up and triggered some of my worst chronic headaches when I wore it too long. That, and even when I could clamp one side of my hair and stuff the other inside the claw, it would not always stay that way. The sloppiness of it all reminded me too much of having to make do after gym class years before. The claw was quickly followed by a bejeweled tuck comb, which also never worked. I always ended up sending the comb skittering across the room because it could not find purchase in my hair. I shouldn't have been surprised as I was, considering that one out of the three I bought, there were exactly zero people on the packaging with hair that looked like mine. I was used to being in majority white spaces by that time, but I was not used to the loss of access to people like my sister and my mother who understood the struggle of taking care of my hair. When it was too much to manage, when a relaxer was necessary, I took the bus home on weekends to Buffalo, where my mother would pick me up and take me to my beautician, Anne, on Saturdays, before taking the bus back on Sunday. Anne still works her magic on my hair today, keeping it manageable enough to put into a ponytail when I please. When I desperately needed for my hair to be swept up, I would ask my roommates or hallmates to help me, and they were happy to do it, but I was the only black person in my friend group. When we spent nights at Lee's family's cottage, getting my hair wet, especially after a relaxer, was a big concern of mine, so I asked Lee or her sister Melissa when I had to. When I did not, if my hair got wet, it got wet. I knew that my hair was different from that of my friends. My hair was thick, and it took a lot of time and patience to get it to cooperate. They weren't sure how to approach it, and I never expected them to be. I was thankful to them for even trying, but it pointed out the glaring differences between us, so I tried not to ask very often. I didn't like the idea of making them uncomfortable or doing anything that may have made them regret getting to know me. Instead, I used the claw or the comb, or I wore my hair down. Asking for help made me feel like an outsider, like the younger me watching those girls with perfect hair. For a lot of disabled people, the offer of help is given without our explicit consent, and it feels infantilizing, especially when we don't ask for it. We often are reduced to obstacles that able-bodied people must find a way around. Oftentimes, the help is born out of the idea that we are inconveniences more than anything else. My words here are harsh, but this has been my experience in the case of strangers asking me if I need help and becoming indignant when I politely declined. Disabled people are not, quote, good deed for the day, unquote, tickets. We are human beings with autonomy first. That is how we should be treated. If we say we're good, trust us, we don't always need saving. On My Nightstand is a special segment of the Only One in the Room podcast. Today's episode was produced by Scott Slaughter, who I call Hun, and executively produced by Christina Barcy, who we call Barcy. Thank you for listening to The Only One in the Room. Please join us each Tuesday and Sunday for an incredible, brand new Only One interview, and every Friday for On My Nightstand, where I'll be reading from something that I love. If you have an Only One in the Room story or a piece of writing that you'd like to share, please submit it to theonlyonepod@gmail.com. From all of us at The Only One in the Room, we wish you dopeness, health, and prosperity.
Hello, dear stranger. I'd like to introduce you to something new, or perhaps something very, very old. The Heresies of Radolf Burntwine is a horror fantasy medical mystery following the titular monk turned traveling medical investigator. Follow Radolf as he navigates a nightmare world in which viruses are gods and the human race are not their favored children. Steeped in history and an aesthetic that can only be described as a combination of occult academia and laboratory Judaica, the Heresies of Radolf Burntwine have been described as Umberto Eco meets H.P. Lovecraft. For more information, check out the Patreon at thorb.info. But take care, dear stranger, for some truths are best left unknown.